Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about taking control. And sometimes, well, actually, to a certain level always, you need to be able to take control as a leader because that's why you're the leader. You're going to have people follow you, to have you be the person who's, well, in charge, right? So I think our first question is going to be, what type of control do we as leaders need to assert within our context, within the context of an alternative dispute negotiation, a mediation, an arbitration, a seminar, a workshop, whatever it is we're doing where we are reaching consensus or teaching how to reach consensus, right? Yeah. So what kind of control do we as leaders need to take? Do we need to assert? Oh, I see we have lots of people. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for your participation. Oh, my goodness. You've all been listening. I'm so excited. I think our number one answer to what kind of control do we as leaders need to assert is, what I'm going to call the civility rules enforcement. Yes. And we talk about the civility rules all the time on this show, don't we? And welcome to everyone. Welcome to the new people. Yes, we do. Recipe for Peace Now has practically no actual rules. But the one that we do have is the civility rules. And essentially speaking, they say that you will not be rude to each other, right? Yeah. And Norman and others are saying that is it. The civility of not being rude, right? Mm-hmm. Hong says it's taking turns and waiting until you're called upon to speak. Yes, we've got a great deal of agreement that civility rules enforcement is one of the main things we need to take control of as a leader. And quite frankly, you need to tell about the civility rules up front. It's one of the things I tell everyone. Even if I don't think we're going to need it with this group, because sometimes you have a group that's really quite in agreement with each other. But you know, people are people. And sometimes the civility rules need to be enforced even with that kind of group. I tell the group about the civility rules right up front. It's transparency, right? Besides, you want them to obey them and without having to say it again. Yeah, and everybody nods their head because they're all intending to. But, of course, you need to take control of that, and you need to do it right away. Yes, if you let civility slide because, I don't know why, but you let civility slide. I've seen people do this. I've seen leaders do it. They let civility slide, and then they have to reprimand someone, and they have to backtrack it. But, you know, I guess it's never really too late. But, boy, it would have been better if you had enforced it the first time civility slid and every time thereafter, until we all got used to the fact that in this particular instance, in this particular negotiation, in this particular, whatever it is, a workshop, a seminar, an alternative dispute resolution, negotiation, a mediation, whatever it is you're doing, at this particular time, in this particular issues, at this particular group, we will act civilly to each other. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you need to take control of and enforce right away. Yeah. Don't hesitate on it. Don't let somebody get away with something because it will get worse. And lack of civility is catchy, right? Yeah. Then the other, someone else will try it because they think it's funny or they can get away with it. You know, human nature is not necessarily to be civil. Yeah. And Hong and others are saying that the main thing is the taking turns. Taking turns to speak, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Norman and others are saying also waiting until called upon to speak. Sometimes we do that, right? If everybody needs to speak, or a lot of people want to put in their opinion, sometimes we raise hands, right? Or indicate to the leader that we'd like in turn also, we'd like to speak also. Or maybe three people speak at once and they kind of, you know, one person, you say, well, you go first and then you next and you next. You have to create the turn taking, right? Yeah, it's not exactly school. Well, workshops and seminars kind of are school, aren't they? Mostly people raise their hand. But it's very important to take turns, right? Yes. And also, and we have talked about this on prior shows, but it's worth repeating every single time we talk about the civility rules because it's so important. We need to set a time limit for speaking if that's what we need. Now, sometimes it's free discussion up and back, and it's going well, and nobody's really what they call filibustering, right? They're not kind of grabbing the floor and not letting go and not stopping. So you have to make the time limits when you've got a bunch of people that want to, yes, people are saying talk forever, nonsense. No. I don't know if it's nonsense or not, but they want to take all the time for themselves, right? So you'd have to have set time limits, right? Mm-hmm. Now, not for up-and-back negotiation discussion. We know what I'm saying. Time limits for when somebody is really making a point, making an issue, making a report maybe even. Mm-hmm. Yes. And if you need to do that, depends on the group, right? I know I just said it depends. Many guys say I say that all the time. But it's true. It depends on the group, on the amount of issues, on the contentiousness within the group, and on whether or not you've got some people who will never talk unless it's their turn, and some people who will never give up the microphone, even, you know what I mean, it's not necessarily a microphone, but will never give up talking, even if it's past their turn, right? Right, they're making a speech. If you need to put a time limit, you need to have somebody keep the time, right? So everybody's equal. And yes, a lot of you are saying use a timer. Yes, you've all gotten to do that. Fabulous. I actually advocate that just because I do it. I actually like a cooking timer set to the same amount of time for everyone so that you can see it in the room. You can hear it clicking off so you know how much time you've got left. It goes ding, right? And it's not controlled by a person who the speaker might feel had cheated them, right? Yeah, because everybody thinks they didn't get their full share of time because they had more to say. But this makes people more succinct also. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, and it's very equal. Everybody knows they've gotten the same amount. They've gotten the same ding. Nobody did anything to it. Nobody counted wrong. Yeah. And you don't have to hold up the one-minute warning sign either, which is kind of intrusive. Mm-hmm. Yes. So a lot of people are talking about the civility rules and of not being rude and of the components of that. Yes. Joyce and others are saying that one of the things that the leader needs to take control of is tone of voice. Not only the participant, because you can say something that seems very neutral, but the tone of voice will make it combative or sarcastic or reasonable. Yeah? In tone of voice, it needs to be noticed, and you need to break out the civility rules right away, and you need to watch your own tone of voice. Yes, because the main thing we are is a good example of the civility rules, aren't we? And our tone of voice makes a difference. It does. we cannot be rude, sarcastic, and like that. No, it is not a good example to the others. We can't enforce leadership control on something that we as leader are not doing. Tone of voice for ourselves as well as for the participants when they deal with each other, right? People are talking about tone of voice in an email, tone of voice in writing. Yes, I am very much an advocate of rereading your emails. I will indeed step in if people are taking offense at an email. I always assume, until proven otherwise, that it was thoughtlessly done. Because a lot of times people write something quickly and hit send, maybe a text even, without rereading it and considering what it really says to the outsider, to the reader, because when they wrote it, they knew what they meant. Does that make any sense? Yeah. I am a great advocate. I tell people this all the time. It is one of the things I actually say when I am explaining the process. I am a great advocate of reread your email. If there's anything in it that as an impartial third-party reader you might not understand, you should clarify it. And if you're not certain you should send it, don't. That's my rule. If you're not certain you should send this, don't send it. Sleep on it. And never, ever, under any circumstances, stay away from keyboards. Stay away from devices. Never send anything when you're impaired. Sleepy, hungry, angry, drunk, otherwise, no. We're going to stay away from all electronic devices and keyboards. Have a nice lie down, and we'll feel better when we get up. Yes. people are asking, and this is an interesting question, and then we're going to get back to the civility rules. But it's an interesting idea. And I've got quite a few people asking me this question. A lot of people are asking me, and thank you for all of your participation, Hussein and others, that whether or not I, because of my experience over the years, and I've been doing this a really long time, more than 30 years, as a child, yes, they're asking me if I think that people have become less civil. The answer is, I don't think that human beings have become less civil. And I have thought about this because it seems like it, doesn't it? I don't think human beings have become less civil over the generations and years and years. I think that the quickness to be uncivil has gotten so fast that people hit send when in the past they would have not have been able to have such a quick reaction and they would have thought it through. Does that make sense? Yes, I'm getting a lot of agreement. In the past, in my past, with when I first started, there was not computers like there are today, right? I mean, if you had a computer, a Selectric typewriter was mighty fine. And if you had a computer, it was the Apple big square box that had the smiley face on it, right? Yeah. And there was no such thing as texting and blogging and like that. Communication, you didn't use a quill pen, for God's sake. But you had a cool-down period. Unless you were talking face-to-face. And face-to-face is not... Most people, unless they have a very bombastic personality, don't like to fight face-to-face like that. You'd have to have a certain personality type to do it, right? Yeah. don't like to actually yell at each other face to face and really well, we don't get to the shoving match in my world because I stopped that. But yeah, that's the idea of the thing, right? And nowadays you can do it not anonymously. Well, you could do it anonymously, but even not anonymously, in writing where it's safe-ish. And people blow off steam and hit send when they should have just thought about it first, because it's out there forever. Before computers and before the swiftness of communication, you had to actually bother to call somebody. They had to answer the phone. It was more inefficient. Or you had to write it down on a letter with a piece of paper and a typewriter or a pen. Well, by the time you did those things, you thought better of it, right? Yeah. Did that make you a more civil person? No, because if you had had the ability to send it really fast, you would have. Please don't. If you're in any way excited, even if it's enthusiastic excited, any kind of excited, don't send something until you take 3 deep breaths and think it through. Don't send something until you've reread it like a third-party outsider. Don't send something that has a sentence or 6 words, not even a sentence, a sentence fragment, that can be extracted and blogged about and misinterpreted. I am very careful. I send positively terse emails, I swear. And I am very careful. I reread them. I never do one in anger. Mm-mm-mm. It will come back to you. Those are permanent. Those are forever. Those are kept in someone's file to be taken out at the most inopportune moment after you've already forgotten that you did such a, well, less than civil thing. Don't do it. Yeah. And never, ever say anything rude about anybody. Hopefully not in person. But we're all humans. But never say anything rude about anybody on paper, in writing. Right? Yeah. Be careful about the blogging, too. I see people blogging constantly. It's like stream of consciousness. That's nice, but you're not Kafka. And he thought about the stream of consciousness. It was just a way of doing stuff. Okay, now that I've had my little rant. But yes, be careful. Tone of voice is in writing, too. And tone of voice is in the head of the reader. Mm-hmm. Hussein and others are talking about the civility of not being rude with body language, right? Yeah. You ever had people, somebody kind of do the extreme body language to be distracting and rude, at the same time? Yes, how exciting. They roll their eyes and kind of plop back with their arms folded in a scowl. No, no, no. Everybody has their time to speak. You don't expect people to do that on you. You will not do it on other people. Mm-hmm. I actually call these things out right away. I'm of the dog training variety. I think that if you talk about it later, it's too late. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, people are talking about people making noises, like snorting noises. Ah, distracting noises, yes. I've seen that in courtrooms especially. The clicking of a pen, the jingling of change, the hunting for something. Ever seen that one? Yes. Oh, my goodness, I've lost my glasses. And hunt, 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 they're on the top of my head, right? It's a distraction. It's to keep people from fully listening to someone that they don't agree with, right? Yeah. Body language. That's all body language, yes. Mm-hmm. And we need to pay attention to it. Yes. We've talked about that in prior shows. They are archived in more detail. They are archived on the website, recipeforpeace.com. Now.com. Mm-hmm. What else about disability rules? We're going to give people, Darcy says, to give people our full attention and to not be able to use devices. Mm-hmm. Yes. That goes to listening, which I think is going to be our next topic on disability rules. I am a great believer that, you know, that it's partially because of my belief that I've just told you that you shouldn't send things as you're sitting there. You should think them through. You should think through what you've just written. If you are busy texting, looking at emails, looking at the Facebook with the next favorite picture of cats or something, attention. And if we all know that texting is the new passing of notes in class, you might even be texting somebody else in the room with comments about what the speaker is saying that are less than civil. No, we will not be doing that. Teacher knows. Yes, the leader knows. You can tell because they get a text, they laugh, and they look up at the guy speaking. No, no. We are going to put our devices away. Yes, some of you advocate confiscation, I know. Only if necessary. I don't generally make people leave their devices at the door. You know what I mean. I don't generally make them stick them on a table or something, but you could. I don't generally do it because I don't generally have to do it. But if people cannot stop doing the phone thingy, I think they're going to have to give it up for the hour that we're going to be together. Right? Yeah. And, you know, it's in some people that is a, it's a concept because they're, that's another one of their hands, that device. They really need it. Yeah. Uh-huh. So what else under the civility rule enforcement are we going to have? Rick and others are talking about listening with an open mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah, listening with an open mind. Mm-hmm. This is very heartwarming also. Andrea and a lot of other people, a lot of you have broken out when we talk about listening with an open mind. My favorite way of listening with an open mind, and we talk about it a lot on this show, and that's the 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why? The 5 W's. Who, what, where, when, and why? Because we won't be able to listen with an open mind unless we understand, unless we have some empathy, right? Some understanding. That does not mean agreement. People get all excited that if you have empathy, you're agreeing. No, you are understanding where that opinion is coming from, why that person has it, who, what, where, when, and why. Yeah? And that is getting down to the real issues at hand so that we can resolve them, so that we can understand that it's in all of our interests to come together and to make consensus. But without the empathy, the understanding of the who, what, where, when, and why, the 5W questions, how are you going to know? How are you going to know what to do, right? Yeah, use of the 5W questions. Gabriel and others are talking about private versus public talking. Mm-hmm. And it is true that sometimes we use what Bayani and others are calling peer pressure, yeah? And it works both ways, right? Good and bad. You can have peer pressure to work hard, or you can have peer pressure to be stubborn, right? Bayani is correct that there's a big difference between private and public talking also for the leader. Now, sometimes, and I've told you just now that I enforce the civility rules right away. Sometimes you do them in front of everybody as an example of what we're going to do, right? But in order for the leader to be a good example of the civility rules, and we are, says leader, we're a good example of the civility rules, right? In order for us to do that, we need to really follow the civility rules in front of everyone. And sometimes we need to call a break, which is why we have the food in the room, right? And talk to someone privately about their attitude, right? About their incivility. Mm-hmm. And so that's public versus private. Peer pressure is, of course, public, right? Unless, yeah, is that peer pressure? I suppose it is. Sometimes in the private talk, you need to mention that if we don't follow the civility rules towards our fellow members, our fellow participants, you have to have a, oh, I guess I should call it a threat. Yeah, people are saying a threat. I suppose it is. But you tell people what's going to happen privately, what is going to happen if they don't act more civil to their fellow participants and maybe even to you, the leader. Yeah. And a lot of times that is an employment threat. We're going to say informational. Because I think threatening is uncivil, right? But just telling people something for their own good might be civil, right? Mm-hmm. Private, though, not in public, private. You might mention that their person they sent them, their supervisor, their leader of the group that they're from, might be called in to remedy the situation. You might actually need to call them, right? Yeah? And say, you know, I could use a little help here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People are saying just dismiss the uncivil person from the group. Just kind of throw them out. Yes, if you can. Sometimes they are sent as an agent from a different group that has a viewpoint that needs to be heard. Sometimes they are integral to the process because of their position. Sometimes those are the things that make them feel they can be uncivil, but they can't under my control, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they think they're kind of important. And they might be important to the group, which they know, of course, and can't actually be thrown out, be fired, be dismissed. Mm-hmm. But they can be civil. That's the rule, yeah. So listening with an open mind, use of the W questions, and that's a private talk. Maybe it becomes public too, don't know. And somewhere along the line for the truly uncivil, we're going to try either peer pressure and or talking, getting someone who they either respect or fear to tell them that this is not the moment to act like that. Yeah, I call for help sometimes, depending on the situation. Yeah. Yes. Okay. What other type of control, besides the civility rules, do we, because we could talk about the civility rules all day, but we'll run out of time. Besides the civility rules themselves, do we know what other kind of control do we need to assert as leaders when we're doing whatever it is we're doing, alternative dispute resolution, mediation, negotiation, workshop, seminar? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to call this control of process. Because mm-hmm. we're getting a lot of agreement that we need to control the process so that we can go forward. Uh-huh. Yeah, and as leader, that's what we need to help the group do. Because a lot of times, in fact, that's why you need a leader. A lot of times the participants kind of are all talk and they're having trouble with the action, right? Or they're having trouble getting to the next step so that they know what action needs to be taken, right? Yeah, we've got a lot of discussion, and that's good. But we're not pushing forward, right? So we need to be aware of how, of the leadership taking control of the process itself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, Christy and others are saying the first thing you need to do is explain the basics of how this works. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do that right up front. I do it even if I know that some of the people in the room have already been to a mediation, an alternative dispute resolution, whatever it is we're doing, and because they've done it with me. Mm-hmm. But I, even if everybody's heard it, I don't have a memorized thing, so it's not real boring. And I like to refresh everybody's memory And besides, every time you do it, it's different. It's not the same. And you know, people have a general idea, but I like to really talk about how we're displaying the basics of how this works. Yes. People are asking if I give an estimate of how much time it's going to take. Let me think about this. I emphasize actual deadline. If there's a deadline, that's how much time it's going to take, because we need to be done by this date. It's what sometimes in the States we call a drop-dead date. It's kind of an Americanism, and this is, of course, a global show. But it means you've got to have it done by this date, or you're dead. You can't go any further. It's gone. A lot of times that's some sort of an outside deadline for some sort of filing or something. Many times a government has some sort of drop-dead date, has an actual date by which something must be in. Permits, filings, ballots, initiatives, whatever on earth it is we're trying to do. But it's got an actual, that's a focus date. For something that is more ongoing, I don't like to estimate how long it'll take. And if I do, because people insist, I try to make it bigger than I think, so that when we finish early, it'll be fabulous. You understand what I mean? Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, I'm getting some disagreement because I'm getting some of the other side, which is probably just as valid. It's just as valid. I just think that if you say bigger and you get done faster, it's very reassuring, heartwarming, and people want you again. There is the theory that if you give people too much time, they will fill it, and it will take that much time just because they've taken up the time, right? It's kind of like if you've got a bunch of closets, they get filled with junk. And if you have no closets, they get one little closet, it gets filled with only stuff you need. So I go both ways, yeah. It's a valid point either way. It may depend on the group. It may depend on the complexity of the issues. Yeah, we'll go for that. It's kind of like, yes, well, we need to take control. Now, others are saying that we really need to explain the specifics of the process. Mm-hmm. Yes. And when we explain the specifics of the process, Anako and others are saying the leader breaks out the 5W questions. Yes, very important. We need to, it's not just something we ask. The 5Ws are something we answer. Who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, why. And when we take control of the process, the who is the introductions, right? I like everybody to introduce themselves. Some people are allergic to name tags. I kind of like them. I confess that I see a lot of people, and I do indeed sometimes accidentally lose track. Oops. So I really like name tags. Some people refuse to wear them. It depends how you feel about life, really, and how adamant you are about it. I don't have a real deep-seated opinion, but I do think that a name tag is helpful. I really do. I like to introduce everybody all around each time because we forget. And I suppose really secretly because I lose track, right? Yeah, I do. I'm sorry. But I like to hear it. We meet with some frequency. I like to do an introduction and say what it is, what interesting thing we did over the week. Yeah, some sort of a question that we'd all like to answer, something positive, right? Yeah, and then when we have our break, people can talk about it, right? Yes, and people often have something either interesting or wonderful that happened to them, yes, or maybe even something that they can ask the group for assistance with, not to our issues really, but just does anybody know, I don't know, a good chiropractor. You know what I mean? It's sometimes people have something they would kind of like to ask the other people, just as an informational. I could really, you know, my husband's throwing his back out. Does anybody know anybody? Type thing. Well, that's bonding, right? That's getting to know each other. That's having a connection beyond the scope even of this group, but will help us in our negotiation. Because already we've bonded, we've asked a question, we've done something for each other. Yes, so the who is the introductions. Mm-hmm. Who, what, what's to be expected? What am I expecting of you? If I give an assignment, what do you need to do? I expect, one of the things I expect under the what's expected, is that if you reach a problem, or you can't do it, or you don't exactly understand what you're doing, I expect you to ask, and not just ignore it, do it sideways, do it poorly. No, I want you to be able to ask and say, I don't know what to do with this. Could you help me? Yeah, ask. Asking is a real good thing. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So that's the who, the what, the where. Well, that's the physical accommodations, right? Where are we going to meet? Where are we going to get this? Where will this be dropped off? Where will things happen? The where, the when, who, what, where, when? When will we meet? When will we communicate? How will we communicate, really? Mm-hmm. When should we have a response? Right? Yeah. Because it needs to keep going. Sometimes people read it and then they don't respond to it. No. Please, we need to keep it going. We need a response within 3 days, right? 2 or 24 hours or whatever it is that we need, right? Yeah. I like to set a time limit for responding. And the number of same emails that you can get to. Who, what, where, when? And why? Mm-hmm. Why have we gathered? What's our mission? Yeah. Why are we here? Why do we want this? A clarification of that is very important. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, a lot of people going clarify and define. Michael and others are talking about a mission statement. The why is very important. That's part of the process. The why is what it is that we want, and why do we want to? Why are we here? Why are we taking our time and our effort and maybe some money to get this done? Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes the why, especially if it's a seminar or workshop, but even if groups in the United States, there's an emphasis, excuse me, I take a sip of water. Oh, excuse me, thank you. There's an emphasis on community outreach in a lot of organizations. And sometimes the why is not so much a personal belief, business-type requirement that you go out and do good or that you get this education, that you take the seminar or workshop. Now, when that happens, because we are such a dedicated group, right, and because we are going to clarify and define our mission and what success looks like, they will buy in when they didn't think they would. You see, those the type of people that are kind of required to be there are really good. I mean, it's not that they are unwilling, but they have to understand what the mission is and also what success looks like. Yes. Now, Emil and Michaels and others are talking about making an actual mission statement. I think it's important if it's the right group, right? Now, sometimes the mission statement comes with the workshop or seminar. We're going to learn this. We're going to learn negotiation process. We're going to learn civil discourse. You see, if the mission is to come and learn. some groups don't need to write down the mission statement, and it'll only take time away from doing something more active because they're in agreement. They know what their mission is, and they know what success will look like. It's defined. But some groups need it. They need to take a mission statement and to define what success looks like. And the main thing to remember for all of these groups is to be flexible. Sometimes you start out and you know exactly what success looks like, and then you find out it's going to be modified. That's not a bad thing. That's just how the world works, right? Yeah. So a mission statement, even if it is just very simple, and what success looks like, and remember to be flexible. Yeah. What else do we as leader need to take control of so that we reach a successful outcome, so that we really are able to help to get the process going? What do we need to clarify and define? I'm going to call this yes. We're getting a lot of consensus today. Thank you very much, all of you, for being here, for all of your participation. I'm going to call this next thing that we need to assert control over group and participant focus, because really that's very important, because we can't make the process go forward if we lack focus, right? So group dynamic and participant focus. Yeah. Yes, Parul and others saying you need to focus on what moves us forward towards success and not get sidetracked. Need to focus on what moves us forward towards success and not get sidetracked. Sidetracked is kind of indeed a little Americanism. It means kind of veer off the path. Yeah, the theory being that you're on a track like a train and then you kind of veer off and you need to get back to the main focus. Yes, you need to move forward. And it is indeed the leader's responsibility to, as Nancy and Parul and others are saying, maintain a strong group dynamic and focus. And a lot of people are adding enthusiasm level, enthusiasm, yeah. And it's very important to stay focused and to keep enthusiasm, but to always know what your successful outcome looks like and move towards it. Sometimes there are very interesting side issues. And there's someone who's very interesting in the group, and they're a good storyteller besides, right? It makes them interesting. But it doesn't move us forward. It kind of gets us thinking on other things that are good things, and they will prove useful in the future. But at the moment, we need to get this done, right? Leadership control. And I'll actually come right out and say that. Wow, that's fabulous, but we need to get this done first, right? Yeah. So you maintain strong group dynamic by really maintaining the enthusiasm level. Yeah. How do you maintain the enthusiasm level? Ian and others are saying you have to be clear on why they're interested and interested in the same outcome, even though they're very dissimilar. Yeah. That you need to be clear on why the participants are interested, because that's your group dynamic, and that they all want the same outcome, even though they're dissimilar, right? Yeah. And it's the leader's duty to take control and point that out. A lot of times you have people in the room who are extremely dissimilar. Not even so much as human beings. They might be dissimilar as human beings, but they've come from different angles, different opinions to be in the room, different needs, right? Yeah, yes. I usually use the legalization of marijuana as an example of this. In the United States, most of you know, that, especially if you've listened to the show before, I think I used the story before, most of you know that marijuana is illegal on a federal level. for years, many different types of groups pushed towards legalization. Now, they actually did work together somewhat. And they were all had the same outcome, the same vision of success, legalization, but they wanted it for different reasons, right? You had people who were ill, and they wanted it for pain relief or nausea relief, right? And that was all kinds of different groups, because there was different kinds of things, that different kinds of afflictions that marijuana would alleviate, right? Oh, AIDS, the type of diseases that have to do with muscle spasms and have to do with wasting and like that. I mean, there's just a ton of them. They're all different. They've all got, in the United States, they've all got an organization kind of doing research and outreach and, well, I guess you'd call it marketing, really. But they're all different, but they want the same outcome. You had people who wanted legalization for a social reason, because they wanted it for the good of the country. They thought it was a stupid idea to be arresting people and putting them in jail and really making them criminals for selling or possessing marijuana, right? Then you had the growers. Then you had the people who wanted to be the retailers, yes. Then you had the politicians who were scared out of their little minds and would go whichever way they thought their electorate would take them, right? Yes. All different reasons wanting the same successful outcome. Need to keep them focused. Yes. And then they had to get even more focused, even more, this will get us towards the path to success. Let's not get sidetracked. Because they all had to think outside the box. Yes. Think for alternative methods outside the box. Yes. If that also is an Americanism, it means to think of ways to do something that haven't been thought about before. Not the usual. Because we all know, I think, that in the United States, the federal government is above the state government. State above city, city above county. They're like that. There's layers of government. Oh, lucky us. Yes. Yeah, it's a lot of government, a lot of politicians running around. And the layers of government, the federal's the highest. States ordinarily cannot violate federal law. It was determined after years and years and years and years and years of effort, that the push to legalize marijuana was not working on the federal level. So highly imaginative people who got together with other diverse but highly imaginative people said, let's see if we can get on some state ballots to be voted on. Because we have to show the federal government that the people really want this. Because there is a strong contingent against legalization, right? Yeah. It's the alcoholism prohibition type argument. But they're entitled to their opinion, and they're quite vocal and active. So we're going to show the elected officials, because that's all they care about, what their constituents want, right? Right. Mm-hmm. And so it was put on state ballots to be voted on by the citizens. Very, very unusual. It's never been done before because it's illegal federally. And the federal government could come in and close down all the legal in the state pot shops and arrest the owners. Cool. Technically speaking, they have not enforced the federal law, and the states have been allowed to have legalized marijuana within their borders. Yes, yes. Very imaginative thinking, though, and lots of diverse people having to be kept on track towards the successful outcome of legalization, legal possession, especially for medical. Most states, I don't know if that's a true statement or not. We got a lot of states. A lot of states have legalized medical marijuana, right? Recreational, a little bit further behind. Although, quite frankly, in my state, it's been legalized also. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what else do we need to keep the participants and group focused on, in addition to success, in addition to moving forward, in addition to focus on the ultimate goal. Mm-hmm. What else should we do to help participant focus? I am very big on this, keeping track of deadlines. Somebody has to do it. If it's not literally the leader, it needs to be someone who reports to the leader. Deadlines are extremely important. You don't want to blow one and have to beg back in. And sometimes they're serious deadlines, as in it must be on the ballot by this date, right? Yeah. So that's very important, very, very necessary for someone. If the leader is too busy, someone truly responsible must be held accountable for doing that. And announcing it in time for us to get all our stuff together and not go tomorrow is the deadline. Everybody get your things in. No, we need to know 2 weeks in advance so that we can do that, so we can gather it together. We're busy people. Right? Right, yes. Mm-hmm. How else do we keep group and participant focus? Warren and others and Lakia are saying that you celebrate each step to remember how far we've come. Celebrate each step to remember how far we've come. You know, human beings forget. It seems like you're not moving very fast. It seems like we're just about where we started, right? Because sometimes the process takes time, and sometimes it's dependent on outside factors that have to be given some time. And sometimes there's a lot of issues to be discussed and decided upon. And it seems like, gee, it's taken forever and we're not getting anywhere. And the answer is no. We're going to celebrate each step, each success, so we remember how far down we were when we started this process and how far we have come. And that's the leader's responsibility, too, to remind everybody. Yeah, people are advocating a timeline. I think the same thing about timelines that I think about mission statements, that some groups need them. It's a focus point. And some groups don't. They have the ability to internally focus. Yeah. So I think that it cuts both ways. But I think it's not a bad idea. It depends on the group, right? Yeah. So, now that we've got focus and participant focus, what are the kind of leadership control do we need? I'm going to thank you for all of your participation. I'm going to call this next area, oops, I think we're going to run out of time and not do the recipes again. But we're having such a good discussion. Yeah. Leadership control with the dealings of with outsiders, right? Yes, somebody has to be the, Theo and others are saying that you need a designated spokesperson. Probably the leader, but not necessarily. Sometimes there's someone else in the group who would be a better spokesperson than the leader. Yeah, people are saying who? Well, sometimes there's someone with more gravitas in the public, a public official, a celebrity, someone well-known, which I guess is a celebrity, who would be a better spokesperson. People would listen closer and follow because they're doing it, right? Mm-hmm. But there should be a designated one. If it's the leader, it's not the leader, if we vote, whatever. We need somebody to talk to other groups and to talk to the media, mainly for the media, because the leader usually talks to other groups, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, Jamil and others are saying that you also need to have someone authorized to make agreements. That would be the leader, the control person, the leader of the group would be authorized to make payments, to make agreements, to write a small check up to a certain amount of money maybe, right? Yeah, you need a leader who takes control of the details like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Ruby and others are saying that you have to remember if you're going to give somebody the power to make payments and to sign agreements, that you should have written down the guidelines for approval so that we all know, and we all know what it is that we need to do in order to get the agreement, in order to sign, right? Yeah, we need to have written guidelines for it so that nobody has a... So what do we need as leader to create all of these things? What kind of effort should we make, right? Yeah. Thank you. People are going listening with an open mind. Yes. And being a good example. So important. And what are the kind of skills? How about organizational skills? So that you can keep everybody on track. Even if you don't literally do it yourself, you need to keep track of the people that do. The day-to-day, the sending of emails, the keeping track, the finding out who needs help, that kind of stuff, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do we need as a leader to create this control? How about empathy? Carla says empathy. Mm-hmm. Yes, remember, empathy is not agreement. Mm-hmm. Yes. And Suki says, remember to be gracious. Remember to be gracious at all times. That's the civility rules again, isn't it? Yes. And look, I've left a few minutes because I know quite a few of you would like to see the salmon casserole recipe. And we've been kind of having it for quite a few weeks now because we sure don't get to two of them. I know I should stop saying that at the beginning, huh? Yes, one maybe potluck recipe made for sharing. Yes. If we're going to have food, and remember food is a tool, with Recipe for Peace Now, a way to get people together so that they're out of the formal process and we can learn something about each other, and also a way to have that little private talk as leader to assert control that we talked about earlier today, right? Pull somebody aside in a neat manner so that no one's offended, right? Nobody gets pulled out. And if you're going to have food, you need to take a survey and see if anybody has an allergy, a prohibition, a religious prohibition to food, or something they simply won't eat. Mm-hmm. You need to disseminate that information. And you need to have people come with a list of what's in the food, not just what it's called, meatloaf, but what is in it, so I can run my eye down the list and find out if I can eat it. Very important, yes. Mm-hmm. So, let us... We should have one also safe recipe that the leader usually brings, right? Something everybody can eat for sure. But this is kind of an adventure recipe because it has fish. And a lot of people are allergic to fish, don't eat fish, have a religious prohibition. Well, mostly to shellfish, but still. You've taken your survey. Everybody can eat this as far as you know. You're going to put a big sign on it that says what it is, and list what the ingredients are so no one gets fooled. We don't want anybody to have a bad time. It's a convivial atmosphere. So this is my smoked salmon casserole. Now, I am usually very reticent to tell anyone to use leftovers because you got to be careful with them. They're leftovers. You don't want to make anybody sick. And you surely don't want to keep them for very long. My idea is 24 hours, eat or out. I really don't like to keep stuff because I'm afraid it'll go bad. But you know, at the holiday time, and this is basically holiday time for everybody around the world, and by the way, happy holidays, whatever it is that you celebrate, because I know we are global. Thank you. People saying happy holidays to me. But a lot of times, especially in certain countries, but maybe all over, you know how you have that nice smoked salmon? And everybody has, it's been on the buffet table, you've served it or whatever, and everybody's kind of taken the nice slices. And there's pieces left, the very edges, the pieces that kind of broke off and like that. And you've got quite a bit of smoked salmon left, but it's not slices and stuff anymore. It's really a leftover, but it's still really good, right? It's not in any way impaired. Yes, yes, I keep emphasizing that. This is the recipe for that for the next day. Because it's expensive. You hate to waste the little scraps, but they're no longer, I don't know, sandwich quality. So here we go. We're going to have a pound of pasta. You know how I feel about it not being the stringy kind, but the kind that is solid, like bow tie looks really pretty with this, or a rotini or something like that. Even around here, you get it in a box, right? And you can get multicolored, which is very nice. Let's have some salted butter. Really, well, the salmon itself has salt. Depending if your salmon is salted or not. If your salmon is salted, you don't need salted butter. Use regular butter. If your salmon is unsalted, we're running out of time. That's okay. So any 5 tablespoons of butter. Let's have whatever kind of salmon you've got left over. It needs to be at least 12 ounces. We're going to cut into pieces. A cup and a quarter of white sauce. I'm going to be a bad person and just use it out of a jar. It's just a basic white sauce if you want to make it. And a cup and a half of grated Parmesan cheese. We're going to preheat our oven to 350. We're going to take some of that butter and grease the casserole dish, nice big one. We're going to cook our pasta, of course, drain it well, set it aside. Let's have, while it's still hot but it's been drained, let's put 4 tablespoons of butter into it and mix it all up so we've got buttery noodles. Mm-hmm. We're going to spoon half of the pasta into our grease dish. Now we're going to put salmon in all over it, right? Pour in the white sauce, sprinkle with half the Parmesan. Add the remaining pasta. Well, half of the white sauce, right? Did I say half the white sauce? Half the pasta, fish, half the white sauce, half the Parmesan. The rest of the, with half the pasta, half the fish, half the white sauce, half the Parmesan. The rest, now another layer, half the pasta, half the fish, half the white sauce, half the Parmesan. It works out extremely well. We're going to layer it. And Parmesan on the top, of course, so it's nice and bubbly and yummy. You have a little bit of butter left over. Maybe put a few dots on the top just so that it gets moist. Mm-hmm. Bake it 15 minutes because it's really all cooked, right? Because smoked salmon is cooked. And there we have it. Yummy, delicious fish. So it's the adventure recipe. Yeah. And we have run out of time. My friends, thank you for being here. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Yes. If you want to hear prior shows, they're on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.